Hello, my wonderful listeners, and welcome back to another episode of Highly Sensitive Money. I'm your host, Diana Giselle Yanez, and I'm thrilled to have you join me on this journey towards financial empowerment and well-being. Today, we're delving into the heart of holistic financial management, exploring how to cultivate stability from the roots up using one of my favorite teaching tools, an image I call Your Money in Full Bloom. Drawing from personal experiences and insightful teachings, we'll uncover the power of aligning our values with our money decisions and building a supportive community along the way.
Today, I will be going over Your Money in Full Bloom, which is a teaching graphic that I use when I'm teaching people. I'm like, how do you get started? It can feel overwhelming. It can feel like who's got the right answer on what to do with money. And as I often share, money looks like a math problem because it has numbers, but it's really a psychology problem. So there isn't really a right answer. However, there are best practices, which is what we will be covering today. The idea of how to teach this was actually when I was doing group coaching. I used to teach a program. I may teach it again one day, called Bosque Money. And it was a 6-month group coaching program to like get through, work through all of your money questions and come out with a really comprehensive personal plan on your own next steps and understand your own money psychology, money history. And while I was getting ready for that, I just thought of what are all of the parts, like what is really crucial for money? I'm very tree focused, nature focused, which is what brought us to this beautiful image. Here we have your fullest self. For people who are listening as opposed to watching the video, let me paint a picture of what this looks like. You have a big tree in the back, like a big luscious tree that's got very wide spread out branches, and you can see the sun kind of coming through it. And on the bottom, there's really thick roots. Some of them are on top of the ground, and it's just one of those trees that you're like, wow, this is a magnificent, magnificent being. It's probably been there at least, I don't know, 400 or 500 years. If my friend Jennifer Walker, who was an arborist, were here, she could probably tell me what kind of tree this was. But in the image, you've got the tree in the background with the sun cascading through it. And there's three different bands that we're going to be looking at. The bottom one says nourished soil. In the middle, we have three little boxes that are past, present, and future. And on the top, we have what's called your fullest self. Now, when people come to me, I always want to start off with the nourished soil, right? Like, where is your tree growing? Where is your money growing? Like, what is the compost that you've gained and lessons learned? And in this nourished soil, there's three main parts. Being rooted in your values. Understanding your values and what's important to you makes it so much easier to make money decisions because it ends up being a filter. If family is really important, if travel is really important, if social justice is really important, it's going to make different decisions. And the more aware you are of what's important to you, the easier it will be to make decisions headed towards that or to give yourself grace as you're growing into these values. Then we have money history. Money history is, what was it like for you growing up with money? What questions did your family go through? What questions have you gone through? What are lessons learned? What did you learn from your mother's side of the family, your father's side of the family? Were you in college when there was the mortgage crisis? Was your family affected by international devaluation? Have there been bankruptcies? All of those things make a difference. And then we also have open money conversations. The ability to have open money conversations is so key, especially even with yourself, right? Like, can you even tell yourself like why it is that you're doing what you're doing with money? Are you clear on what's motivating you? That's really key. Then we have the middle tranche is past, present, and future. And this is mostly what people think of when they think of money. In the past, we have debt management, credit history, employment history, taxes, because taxes are always backwards looking. They're always taxing you on the previous year, not on what's coming. On the present, we have, do you have cash flow clarity? Do you understand what's coming in, what's going out? Are you clear on how you're earning income? Is it the right income? Do you have the right team to support you as you're making new decisions? Do you have, like, if you're newly widowed, you need to work with an estate lawyer to help you figure out what's going to happen with the money that you have? Do you have routine money checkups? In the future section, we have short-term, mid-term, long-term goals, and risk management. So how do you define the timeline for goals? The best practices for financial services is that anything in the next 3 to 5 years is considered short-term. Now that I live in Mexico, I feel like today is considered short-term. Like, we don't really plan out more than that. At least it often feels like that culturally. But short-term is anything that you might need soon. So that's usually the things that you want to not invest, that you want to keep in cash. Midterm is anything in the next 5 to 10 years. So if you have children that are going into middle school, it's time to start thinking about college. I mean, you can also think about college as soon as you get pregnant, but middle school is like the really like, okay, what is the college plan? You'll have a lot more clarity on what that may look like. And then long-term goals, anything that's more than 10 years out. If one of your goals is to own a home, well, is it short-term, mid-term, long-term? If you're thinking of doing it within the next 2 years, then you definitely want to make sure that you have a down payment in cash and that you're working towards maximizing that amount. If it's long-term, maybe you'd benefit from investing it, right? From having it work more than what it would earn in a money market account. Risk management. What is risk management, and do you need risk management? All of us need risk management. Risk is like, what if the worst were to happen? What if shit hit the fan? This is death. This is disability. This is having an accident, like insurance accident. So this is where we put estate planning. And again, I've had clients ask me, do I need an estate? Do I have enough money to need an estate? You need a living directive. If you were to have surgery, right, and you were to become a vegetable, how long would you want to stay on life support? If you became incapacitated and could not make decisions for yourself, who would be your power of attorney for medical decisions and financial decisions? This is where estate planning comes in. How do you want your assets to be divided after you're gone? For a lot of us, it can be really simple here to just have what's called transfer on death. And I'll include an article that I've written on estate management, on risk management. But transfer on death means that whatever accounts you have would immediately go to whoever you designated on them. It could be, like, I have it split between my mother and my brother. So it would go 50-50 between both of them. When you have retirement accounts, there's usually a beneficiary. They ask you to have that set up. And it's easier for you to do these things while you're alive because you'll make it easy to make your wishes known. Nobody wants to think about worst case scenarios, which is often why it can be very helpful to hire a financial planner who will hound you about these things. That's a lot of the time what I end up doing for clients. It's like, we really have to work on your estate. And because of my compassionate inquiry background, I'll sit there and like, I'll ask people, tell me more about what is preventing you from putting this in place. And what can be really helpful is knowing, like, if you have nothing in place, are you happy with how the state would decide things for you? If you have children and you're in sole custody of them, are you happy with how the state would decide the children would be taken care of? It can be very, very helpful to just think things through to the end. And this is where hiring someone to work with you on this can be really helpful. I'll also put resources on here for you to do some of this work on your own. And then we have at the top band, your fullest self. This is your money in full bloom. And I have on here cultivating community with shared values and voicing your best life and your capacity to get there. Now, why community? When people are changing the way that they do money, it can be very isolating. If everybody in your family has always done money a certain way, and now you're planning to just do something different, you can feel really alone. And it can feel like the world is gaslighting you, especially if you're a highly sensitive person. You're just like, wow, these people are not in agreement with what I'm deciding to do. I think a lot about the FIRE movement. There's a movement called Financially Independent Retire Early. And they save usually like 50, 60, 70% of their income so that they can retire at really young ages. I'm thinking like 30s, you know? And a lot of them work in tax, so they're able to do that. And they've created a community online so that they can feel supported in their decisions because they're the ones deciding to not go on the vacation, to not go eat out, and they're doing things differently than their peers, which can be very isolating. Humans are super social. We're very, very social. And what other people think of us, even if we don't want it to, it does matter. which is why it's important to cultivate community with shared values. If you've decided you're vegan and you are now changing and people around you don't agree with you or they're annoyed that you can't go to the restaurants you used to go with, then it's important for you to also have friendships who are vegan, right? It's kind of like that same decision making. Anytime that you're creating any kind of change in your life, you want to have new support that'll hold you as you grow into the new vision, your money in full bloom, your fullest self. And now on the other side, we have voicing your best life and your capacity to get there. That one is so important to me, and it's a little wordy, but it's kind of like, what do you want? What do you want? And can you see yourself obtaining it? There's many areas of my life where I felt like I know what I want, but it feels impossible. A lot of how I live today, I'm like, I cannot believe that this is actually my life because I thought it was impossible, and yet here I am doing it, including this podcast. I am terrified of all of the podcast sharing. Voicing your best life and your capacity to get there. This is just such a beautiful one. This is one that, like, I invite people to journal on, of like, what is your best life? And also know that we're actually not very good at telling what's going to happen in the future. But if you say, like, 5 years from now, this is what I want to have, it basically means you want it now. And you probably, if you're very clear about what you want and start working towards getting it, you'll probably get there sooner than you think. It's also really important that we acknowledge our capacity to make it possible. When people tell me, I'm just not good with money, they're lacking confidence in some area of their life, or there's something that they have been trying to learn that they haven't been able to master yet. It's impossible for someone to say, I'm just not good with money, because there is always a way for you to make it work. Even if it means hiring someone who does a lot of the day-to-day management for you, and then you would be good with money because you would have the support that you needed. We all need different levels of support. It's kind of like saying, I'm not good with eating. I mean, I've had an eating disorder. Like, I've had very difficult times with food, and yet it's not permanent. Right? It's a stage that I went through. Thankfully, I'm very grateful that that's no longer part of my life. And I know for some people, it can consume their life. And yet recovery is possible. There's a lot of support programs for anybody that's going through something where they seem to be stuck in a loop. There's always support. But it's important that we have the feeling of self-efficacy, that we have the feeling that we're able to get there. Because if you don't think it's possible, then it isn't. Again, I don't want to blame the victim. I know that there's so many hurdles to get through and that money can be really complicated. Yet, if you believe it's not possible, then it really isn't. But if you believe that it is, then you'll start experimenting, keyword experimenting, until it works. Now, this graphic is full. Right? This graphic kind of covers everything I could think of about a person's financial life, both the internal, where they're going, and then the technical things in the middle. And of course, I didn't include on here like stock options or anything, because I kind of relate that to earning income and planning for the future and planning for the past. But a lot of this, I mean, this graphic kind of covers everything. So I have people start at what I call the first 7 steps. And I'll be sharing a different graphic. So here we have the first 7 steps. And it's, again, that same luscious tree in the background with the sun coming through. And now I've narrowed it down to 7 key things to look at. And it's kind of all over the place. It's not really an order from bottom to top. First, in the present, I invite people to have an emergency fund of $1,000. Depending on your lifestyle, $1,000 may be more than enough, especially like if you live in Mexico. But if you live in the US, in the Bay Area, it's not going to be nearly enough, right? So an emergency fund of at least $1,000, learning how to save that is already a skill set. And if you've already got that, then check that and move on to step number 2. But it's really important that you know how to hold money. Sometimes people don't know how to hold money. Right? Because if you had an experience as a child, whenever you had money, it was taken from you, or a big scarcity wound, which is another episode that I'll include in this first season, then it can feel scary to hold it because you don't know when it's going to be taken from you. So learning how to hold it, how to have $1,000 in your account and just be like, this is what's in my account at a bare minimum, that'll be really helpful. Step number 2, minimum life insurance for dependents, or the mortgage if you want your house to go somewhere else, right? Because I've worked with one very specific case where this was, in one very specific instance where this was the case. But considering your life, like, you got to look at your debts. Do you have minimum life insurance for that? Especially if you have children under 18, right? Even children under 26. Like, do you have a little bit of coverage for them if something were to happen to you and they were to be left without you? Step three, understand your values. Having an emergency fund of $1,000, learning how to hold money, and then having minimum life insurance in worst case scenarios makes it so that you can kind of regulate your system, feel a little more calm, and now start to work on how do you understand your values. And there's a little values exercise that I'll also include in the link of, like, well, how do you get there? And values are things that when they're compromised, you feel out of alignment. They're also things that it's easy for you to live towards, right? One of my values is adventure, and that's changed over my lifetime. When I was straight out of college, I was earning very little and I had a lot of student loans, and I wanted to go on adventures. So what I would do is I would go to, like, one museum a month in Los Angeles, and it was really fun. It was a way to get to know my city. I went to the Watts Towers and the Venice Beach Canals, and I made sure to have something new in my life. And then for the past 2 years, I was a digital nomad. There was way too much adventure. I actually realized that stability is also one of my values, or that it's become one of my values as my life has changed, as my goals have changed. Because values do sometimes change. Not very much, but they can. And yet adventure continues to be a value of mine, which is honestly doing this podcast and sharing the way that I think, the way that I look at money. It's kind of an adventure. It's an adventure in vulnerability. So that's number three of understand your values. How do you live into them? Number four, once you understand your values, once you know your values, create a spending plan. The word budget is a word from France in the 1500s, and it literally means a little bag. It is not a way for you to measure your ability to adult or your self-worth. It's just a little bag to keep your coins and track your IOUs. That's it, right? By calling it budget, I literally defang it, right? It's not as intimidating, and it's cute. I have a self-guided course called La Budget de la Lune, The Budget and the Moon, because just like the moon, our money is cyclical. So creating a spending plan actually creates a lot of freedom, because you'll see how your values are being reflected and what's coming in and what's going out, and it'll start to soothe you. As scary as it can feel to work to create a budget, it can be very soothing just to have a little bit of structure. It reminds me of like anyone, again, I'm going to go back to addiction because that's where I have a lot of knowledge. It reminds me of whenever I've had a food plan, right? And being like, these are the things that I bring into my house. These are not the things that I bring into my house. These are my green light, red light, yellow light foods. And it creates freedom where you're not constantly managing the decision anymore. So that's the benefit of a spending plan. Then retirement plan match if available. If you work for an employer, they may have a 401k where they're like, okay, 2% into your 401k will be matched. And then six, a debt management plan. This debt management could be like, if you have your mortgage, if you have student loans, if you have credit card debt. And I just want to come out there and say that, like, bankruptcy can be part of a debt management plan. Debt consolidation can be part of a debt management plan. If you are in a position where you're no longer able to cover your own expenses, or it feels like your debt management plan is going to take 30 years to pay it off, there's always other options. You know, we've had presidents in the U.S. who had bankruptcy. Like, the shame that was there before doesn't have to be there. Sometimes it can feel like it's a personal slight to go into bankruptcy. But like I shared, like, there's been bankruptcy in my family, and sometimes there's just things that happen. I'm not saying bankruptcy is the best answer, especially if you want to own a home or if you are able to pay it off, because it's a long, arduous process, but know that it's an option. And then step number seven, voicing your best life and your capacity to get there. Where do you want to go? Where do you want to go? Do you believe it's possible? That's super key. Once you have these things, then I ask clients to come back to the full version of this, which is your money in full bloom, and check in. What's next for you? What now feels like it has the most movement, right? So you have a spending plan. Well, how do you implement it? Because creating a spending plan is not the same as implementing a spending plan. Maybe that's where you need to put your focus. Or maybe now that you have that minimum life insurance for your kids, you're also thinking, what about disability? What if you're a roofer? You know, like you need to have disability if something were to happen to you and you were no longer able to work at making roofs, putting down roofs. So this visual, all of us intuitively have an area that's like, oh my gosh, that area really actually needs my attention. And it could be like maybe having open money conversations. Maybe you're in a new relationship and you have debts that you haven't told your partner about and you're worried about how will you share this with them, right? Learning that skill is such an important part of managing money. Because again, money looks like math because it has numbers, but it's really much more like psychology. So there's a different skill set that's needed. I work with people who are going through a major transition. There's like something in their life that they want to create. I've worked with people who are getting ready for sabbaticals. I've worked with people who have tripled their income. And they're now like, wow, I was able to live on this and now my income is so much higher. How do I make the best use of it? I've worked with people whose income has really dropped and now they're trying to work through, live on that, how to reach the goals that they have. I love, love, love working with people to create a stable money foundation. So to have a really clear organization. And this graphic is intuitive enough. It's simple enough that people can kind of check in and be like, what's going on with my money today? Because that's also one of the practices that needs to happen. We need to be in relationship with our money. Again, bringing it back to food, exercise. Money is something that doesn't really go away. You still always kind of have to deal with it. From the time that you first realize what it is until you no longer have the cognitive capacity to manage your checkbook, you're going to be in relationship with money. And you want it to be a relationship that feels supportive. I'm not going to say the word nurturing because money is not really nurturing, but that it feels supportive. I often ask people to think of like, what are you asking money to solve? I have this story. My parents worked a lot during Christmas. They had a swap meet and that was our busiest season. So they would just sell and sell and sell. And I remember I have this memory of being around 10 years old and my mom giving me a bunch of pantsuits, like bright red pantsuits, like leopard skin pantsuits. Like, it was very flashy. I felt like a tiny little pimp. And I was telling my mom about this random memory of like waking up in the morning and having a ton of pantsuits. And my mom's like, I felt so bad that I didn't get to see you hardly in December because we were working so much. And I just thought like, wow, I didn't know that, you know? And my mom gave me something physical. She gave me a gift. Giving gifts is my mother's love language. And it was very sweet. And I also wish that she had told me like, hey, I'm going to see you in January. In January, we're going to spend quality time together. For now, here are these adorable little pimp pantsuits for you to wear. She was asking money to do something that money can't do. Money can't be there instead of my mother, you know? And yet, maybe now as an adult, it's become full circle where like, I know that she was thinking of me. She was just busy working. So consider for yourself, as you look at this graphic, and again, if you're listening to this, you'll see the graphic in the show notes. You'll have access to the video. What's important to you to work on next? Do you have your first 7 steps fully laid out? Are you looking for support in any of these areas? And again, full self-disclosure right here that this is, if you want to work with me, this is what we would work through. I also have a discovery workbook that I'll probably show some other time. But these open money conversations, like, because sometimes practicing having the open money conversations with a money coach like myself or somebody else really grows a new skill set in you so that you can go and have these conversations with your partner. That was what was so special about the group coaching, where you could practice having conversations with people who you weren't intimate with, who you didn't know, and that would make you more confident to go on and share it with your boss, with your siblings, with your neighbor, with your landlord, with your clients. It can be difficult to have money conversations with clients. As self-employed people, like, you definitely need to know how to do that. This is Your Money in Full Bloom for personal finances. I have another version of this for business finances that I will share at some other point. This has been an overview of Your Money in Full Bloom, both the first 7 stages and also the full version of it. If you want support as you're working through these areas, please reach out. I offer free 30-minute heart-centered phone calls for anybody with money questions. And it's like a way for me to both give back, for me to learn, and for you to feel more confident in your money, because, you know, you have what it takes to feel good about your money. Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Diana Giselle Yáñez. Did you enjoy this episode? Please share this first season of Highly Sensitive Money with others. To learn how you can upskill your money relationship, join the newsletter over at allthecolors.net. That's allthecolors.net for network. Take care, and remember, you've got what it takes to feel good about your money.